It will be 9/11 times 2,356.
My God, that's... I don't even know what that is.
Nobody does.
Catapults of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us. The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to Sunday evening. Let's see, today is August the 20th.
Yes, and we're looking ahead at what could be a very, very interesting week. First of all, thank you for being here with us. We appreciate your patience with us, especially with me for taking so long to get the Mike Heiser interview uploaded last week. It was kind of a strange week.
It's not that you're busy.
Well,
actually, I say that facetiously. He is a very busy guy. Of course, he's program director and now the ever popular afternoon talk show host. The Drive is, it's driving Columbia
to think.
Crazy.
What's really interesting, and if you've been a listener to PID Radio for a while, you'll find this funny, as funny as we did. We got an email earlier this week from somebody who accused me of being so liberal that they would refuse to listen to this station anymore, and that if they wanted liberal spin, they would listen to Air America. Now, get that. Get that. I've been accused of being as liberal as Al Franken, Janine Garofalo, and all those other people on Air America.
Well, you know, you're going to have to be patient with this listener because
right. The
fact is you and I, even though we are very conservative people.
Yes.
Very. We don't always, in fact, we very often do not agree with the current administration,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't agree with the previous administration very often either.
That's right.
I think that shows that we really are in the middle. And, well, I don't think we generally agree with politicians.
Right. Those who are in it for themselves and, mm-hmm. and to, you know, rule over others. There are genuinely some civil servants who mm-hmm. are in the business because they feel they can do good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting the sense that many of the people at the local level here in Columbia that I've met so far are of that sort.
Mm-hmm. I think that very often is true. Sadly, the higher up you get on the old ladder of success mm-hmm. politically, the more corrupt often you become because you have to make so many. You know, you could start out, frankly, if you and I ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to win at the local level and then go on, for us to keep going on, we would have to make compromises.
Right.
And the question you have to ask is, at what point are you so convinced that if you could only get to the goal, mm-hmm. you can make a difference? Therefore, I'll compromise a little bit along the way. So when I get to the goal, I can make a difference.
Right.
That may well be what it goes on in the minds of men and women who do run
sure.
for state office or even federal office.
And it could be. And by the time you get to that office, though, you find that you're so tied down by promises and compromises that you've made that you're like Gulliver when the Lilliputians have basically pegged you to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot move, and much less do anything good.
Yeah.
But it's not just politicians who get trapped into that cycle. You saw from your time in the music business
mm-hmm.
that in order to move up to a level of national mm-hmm. prominence, which you had the chance to do,
mm-hmm.
that there would have been sacrifices, compromises that you would have had to make that just would not have been.
Oh, absolutely. But you know,
right.
it's not
yeah.
just the secular music business. There are Christian artists mm-hmm. that I know who have had to make compromises. There are Christian authors who mm-hmm. are making compromises.
Sure.
Christian publishers, Christian talk show hosts.
Yeah, yeah.
Christian television programmers.
Mm-hmm.
It is really sad. And I'm not saying so-called Christians because I believe that many of the people who are making compromises really are believers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that same idea. If I'll just make this little compromise in how I believe in order to get the show on the air, because once I'm on the air,
mm-hmm.
what my message is what matters.
Then I can do what I really want to do.
No. Mm-hmm. To our Lord and Savior, it's the walk that matters.
Right.
Not what we see as the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Because he sees the walk, or the race, as Paul put it.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Absolutely. And too often, I think we convince ourselves that we're so important that God can't possibly execute his plan without our help. He needs me to go out there and wield the sword.
He does. And if I don't make it over to that place over there that I envision, now I know it's off his path, but you know what? I'm pretty sure there's a shortcut back to his path from over there.
Right. So anyway.
Oh, no. Well, anyway, yep. That's our lecture for the thing. How did we get on there? How did we go to that? We got off the path.
Quite sure how we
imagine us doing that.
It's amazing. Well, this could be a very interesting week as we look ahead to the 22nd for several reasons. There are a number of things taking place, and we want to talk about those this week. Bear in mind, as always, that when we talk about these geopolitical things, that we truly envision the things that are happening on the world stage, the chessboard, mm-hmm. as pieces that are being moved not by human hands, but by supernatural hands. The things that we see in the news headlines are the reflections of the real battle taking place in the heavenlies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, we need to make sure that we're clear on that right from the get-go. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Korea or do you want to start with Iran?
You know, I love Kim Jong-il, and I just, you know, the whack-a-Kim, that's the game I see whenever I look at North Korea.
Knocked down. I get up again.
He disappeared the day before North Korea shot off their little missiles,
mm-hmm.
and up until just a couple of days ago had not been seen by anybody.
Right.
Now, I will preface this by saying there's no photographic evidence that he's really turned up again.
That's true.
But there are rumors that he has turned up again, and he says he wasn't hiding. He was on his honeymoon.
Yeah. The woman that he's been his secretary for the last 20 years
mm-hmm.
or so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the rumors about his hiding at first revolved around his nervousness about the reaction of the UN or his neighbors, the mm-hmm. Japanese, the South Koreans, even the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
But then in mid-July, and this story is just now coming out because of a South Korean aid agency, a typhoon hit North Korea, and several days of extremely heavy rains caused such flooding that it's estimated that as many as 55,000 people in North Korea may be dead or missing
mm-hmm.
as of mid-July. So a month has gone by, and the word is just now getting out.
And the reason we really can't say that the news sources like AP and Reuters can't really tell us for sure what's going on, it's very difficult to get into North Korea.
Right. According to a South Korean aid agency, in addition, there may be 2.5 million people homeless right now in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about the scope of that disaster. We're talking Hurricane Katrina-sized devastation.
This isn't a very big country either.
No, it isn't. It isn't. So this is huge in North Korea. There was an article that I saw just the other day that said this might actually help North Korea because it may prompt some neighbors to start. And in fact, we've seen South Korea begin to send aid into North mm-hmm. Korea, which they have not been doing because of his, you know, Kim's belligerence lately.
Well, and the reason, let me just go to this. The reason that I wanted to start with Kim Jong-il, aside from the fact that he's got that great hair. If I only had hair like that. Oh.
Well, you wouldn't be able to fit your tinfoil hat on.
No, that's true. My tinfoil hat molds nicely to my little shaved head. If you don't understand that, then go to my SharonKGilbert.com. Kim Jong-il, he's coming out of hiding, coming back from his honeymoon, just in time for the United States to partner up with South Korea,
mm-hmm.
just like we do every year at this time, from what I understand. And we're going to have military exercises. Now, I had to do a little digging, but I figured our fearless leader, George W. Bush, would have something to say about this and sort of shot across the bow to Kim Jong-il.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming into your territory. And sure enough, he did. But I had to go to the Kerala newspaper out of India to mm-hmm. find the story. Bush warns North Korea against nuclear testing. U.S. President George W. Bush has warned North Korea against nuclear testing, but did not comment on media reports that the country was preparing to conduct the underground test of a nuclear bomb. It's a hypothetical question, Bush told journalists at Camp David yesterday, and you're asking me to divulge any intelligence information I have. Intelligence information that he might have. I don't know. There's something about that that just sounds wrong with me. And I'm not going to do that, he says, and as you know, I'm not going to break tradition, he said. You know, to my understanding, Kim Jong-il has not been anywhere. He's not been in the news lately.
Mm-hmm.
So he has not come out and said that it's been reported that, oh, I'm going to test a nuclear weapon.
No, the reports came from ABC, which ABC News was tipped off by intelligence analysts who said, we're seeing suspicious movement around a suspected test site.
Right. Now, we remember earlier in the year the stories that you and I talked about on PID Radio
mm-hmm.
about our own intelligence agencies and military planting stories in
right.
the press. Now, I'm not saying the story about the nuclear weapon is a planted one, but bear that in mind when you hear anything coming out of one source.
Right.
And it's a shadowy source at that.
Mm-hmm.
And just as we are getting ready to conduct exercises off the Korean Peninsula.
Right. It is a very interesting timing, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember when the stories first came out back in June about North Korea preparing to test fire their rockets. We had a former Secretary of Defense, William Cohen, and another high-ranking member of the Defense Department in the Clinton administration, write an op-ed piece for the Washington Post, basically telling George Bush that he needed to go in and bomb now to preempt a North Korean test.
Mm-hmm. And it has been made very clear by our Department of Defense that preemptive strikes, in fact, Dick Cheney
mm-hmm.
said it last year, preemptive strikes are not ruled out.
Right. So we're keeping an eye on that. We know that Korea has missiles that work to some extent. It is assumed that they've got the nuclear material to build a number of nuclear warheads, although they've not yet tested one of these warheads. So that's the key. And the timing of the information about a possible test coinciding with our annual drills with the South Korean military are very, very interesting.
And the timing as far as what you and I spoke of at the very beginning of this podcast,
mm-hmm.
that today is August 20th. August 21st.
Yes.
Is tomorrow.
Yeah. And Monday, August 21st, is the annual celebration of the night journey of Muhammad. This is celebrated differently by Sunnis and by Shiites in the Muslim world, but both of them celebrate the day for different reasons. Debka has a very interesting report about August 21st, 22nd. The story came out some weeks back. We reported it. Sharon found
Watcher
it. The Watcher magazine had it way early as a member of the Reform Party in Syria said, hey, watch this date because this could be a day that the Iranian government celebrates the commemoration of these lights that over Jerusalem, which, mm-hmm. According to Muslim tradition, spread out from Jerusalem to cover the whole world, with an attack on Jerusalem, perhaps of a nuclear nature. That was followed by the op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal by Princeton professor Bernard Lewis, who's an expert in Near Eastern history and religion. And now Debka File is joining with their analysis from intelligence agencies, but from a different perspective. They report that authorities in Israel they are reporting that Washington, D.C. is keeping a sharp eye out for what may happen the 21st and 22nd because information rated highly credible has reached U.S. intelligence agencies about a secret report presented to Iran's supreme ruler Ali Khamenei by one of the heads of his Supreme National Security Council, which indicates that there is a mega terror plot in the works targeting Jerusalem scheduled for August 22nd, which aims at killing large numbers of Jews, Arabs, and Christians. This atrocity, according to Debka, will reportedly arm the United States and Israel with the pretext needed for hitting Iran's nuclear installations as well as Tehran and other big cities. So while Lewis and the gentleman from Syria were warning about in a genuine attack from Iran on Jerusalem, U.S. authorities, well, the Iranians seem to believe that somebody, perhaps the U.S. or rogue elements within the U.S. or Israel or both, plan a terror attack, a false flag terror mm-hmm. attack mm-hmm. that would justify a nuclear war with Iran.
Now, imagine that. There are those in our administration who have been saying for a while you know what, Ahmadinejad is just going to, he's going to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to say the wrong thing at the wrong time because he's not really supported anyway by the Iranians. Well, I don't know that I agree with that, but it's almost like telegraphing in advance. This is what's going to be happening. Get used to the idea. And mm-hmm. when it happens, you'll all go, oh, well, of course, that had to happen. Well, they told us, well,
they were right all along.
Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they're saying the sort similar things about Iraq, which we'll talk about in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But Ahmadinejad has been very open, very strident about his anti-Jewish feelings,
mm-hmm.
the fact that there was no Holocaust. He believes that they have no right to Jerusalem.
Right.
He is a staunch Shiite.
Mm-hmm.
He is a big believer in al-Mahdi.
Mm-hmm.
Returning very soon, and he sees himself, at least this is what he's been saying, he sees himself as someone who can set the way, open the path, get Jerusalem ready
mm-hmm.
for the return of al-Mahdi, because that's how he's coming back.
Yep.
In their eschatology, he walks into Jerusalem along with Jesus Christ, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah. What's really interesting to consider, and if you've not listened to the interviews that we did earlier with Tom Horn about dominionism, Christian dominionism, I encourage you to go back, find those in the archives at PIDradio.com and give those a listen, because the theology Sharon just described for the Shiites, and especially the very radical Shiites like Ahmadinejad, is a mirror image of dominionist Christian theology, which dictates that we Christians need to go out there and clear the planet of heretics and disbelievers to basically plow the road for Jesus Christ mm-hmm. to come back with his legions of angels.
That's right.
Which itself is heretical. But when you look at that belief system and then compare it with American foreign policy, our foreign policy begins to make a lot more sense.
Why, it's almost like Kang and Kirk are being forced to fight each other.
Right. Which gets back to what we said at the beginning of this program, and that the geopolitical maneuvering on the global stage is just a physical representation of what's happening in the heavenlies. So this report coming from Tehran, according to Debka file sources, is something that is not being taken too seriously in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. but is being taken very seriously in Tehran and Washington, D.C. You want to talk about military exercises? Tehran has launched a large-scale air, sea, and ground exercise, which went into effect yesterday, August 19th. This maneuver, which is called the Blow of Zulfaghar, the sword used by Imam Ali, is, involving 12 divisions, Army Chinook helicopters, drones, parachutists, electronic war units, and special forces. State-run television in Iran is reporting a new anti-aircraft system was tested as part of this exercise. The exercise will spread over 14 of Iran's 30 provinces and last about 5 weeks. Debka's analysis indicates that they believe that this is to maneuver their military into position in the event of an American attack following August 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good heavens. Well, you know, Iraq next door,
mm-hmm.
They just had they've been having all of these terrible terrorist acts, bombs going off everywhere. It is a hellish place to live in Baghdad.
Right.
And over the weekend, there were some Shiite pilgrims who had to march through a Sunni section of town in order to get to the shrine of one of the 12 saints in the Shia religion.
Mm-hmm.
A saint who, if I remember correctly, was killed by a Sunni. And sure enough, as these pilgrims went through,
mm-hmm.
they were attacked and 17 were killed. And as I remember, something like 250 were injured.
Yeah, yeah. It was, it basically degenerated into a gun battle with Shiite militiamen in flak jackets exchanging gunfire with Sunnis.
Mm-hmm.
Firing behind from houses and buildings and some firing behind tombstones in a Sunni mm-hmm. cemetery. This is one area in which the reporting from the media in the U.S. is really, even the so-called liberal media, is not really making as big a deal of what's happening in Iraq as I think it should. It surprised me when the general commanding forces in Iraq, whose name escapes me at the moment, testified before Congress and used the words civil war before the Senate. And it was reported in the news, but you're not really hearing the people who get FaceTime on the major news networks, certainly not Fox News, but not even CNN or MSNBC, as far as we can tell. The fact is that things are much worse and degenerating by the week. Over 100 people a day are dying in Iraq. The number of bombs, roadside bombs, planted in Iraq rose in July to the highest monthly total of the war. Now, we've been in command of the country for over 3 years. Why is the number going up? Well, you know, you listen to many of the mainstream pundits, and it's Iran's fault. Well, no, because it's the Sunnis and Shiites who are killing each other. They hate each other only marginally less than they hate, you know, Jews. But since there aren't very many of them in Iraq, they're busy working on each other and any Americans that happen to get in the way. It is, over 2,600 explosive devices were discovered in July. 1,666, according to this article, 1666 exploded, and another 959 were discovered before they went off. But that's unbelievable. And that's not really getting that much attention from the mainstream press. The situation in Iraq has spiraled to the point where it is virtually out of control. And this is after the big security plan was announced by the president in Iraq, the prime minister. And we moved a bunch of troops from the northern sector up around Mosul and Kirkuk down to Baghdad. But even though there are sections of the city there that are effectively little walled-off compounds isolated from the rest of the city, there are still over 100 people a day dying.
I know. I'm convinced that the American people, or many of us, and I'll include myself in that, we have Iraq fatigue.
Yeah.
We just heard too much about it. And I think that, sadly, Fox News, CNN, all the MSNBC, and even the three networks, they realize that. If we want listenership, if we don't want to lose our viewers, we're going to have to show something that's really sexy. They don't want to see Iraq anymore. Hey, look over there.
Lebanon. There,
Lebanon. We've got something to divert. Oh, look, there's a guy confessing to JonBenet Ramsey's murder.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, there are things going on airplanes.
Stakes on planes.
Who's, oh, no, that's a movie, I think. There's a woman, though. She's got the hair gel.
Yeah, or a gel bra.
Oh,
sorry. Let me explain that. U.S. authorities, after the London airline plot was foiled, have actually gone so far now as to say that you cannot wear gel insoles.
You can't be gelling.
On your shoes. You cannot be gelling, whether it's in your shoes or anywhere else.
And so, don't be gelling like a felon.
That's right.
Will get you. But there are so many diversions lately, and Iraq is falling apart.
Yes.
And we are not leaving Iraq, folks. We've got too much infrastructure
money.
That built there.
Yep.
We have a huge palace, embassy built there.
A number of mega bases that are going in.
Oh, yeah.
And very interesting. And this is telling for two reasons. Number one, that that's being admitted in public. But number two, the way the New York Times chose to publish this information. This was a front page story from the 17th of August, titled "Bombs Aimed at GIs in Iraq Are Increasing." You've got to go down to the final three paragraphs of the story to see this little bit of information, and I quote, "Some outside experts who've recently visited the White House said Bush administration officials were beginning to plan for the possibility that Iraq's democratically elected government might not survive. Senior administration officials have acknowledged to me that they are considering alternatives other than democracy," said one military affairs expert who received an Iraq briefing at the White House last month and agreed to speak only on condition of anonymity. Let me read that statement once again. Senior administration officials have acknowledged to me that they are considering alternatives other than democracy.
Let's see. How about kingdom?
Kingdom, dictatorship, outright military rule. We went in there. According to what we were told, to remove a tyrant from power and bring freedom to the Middle East. And now, according to one insider, the government is considering, that's a nice way of putting it, is it considering alternatives
to democracy
other than democracy? Well,
you mean there's something else that would work?
Yeah, the fact is that they've not really had much in the way of democracy to begin with. As much as the government wanted us to mark and remember Purple Finger Day as a turning point, as a memorable day to go down in history on a scale equivalent to the falling of the Berlin Wall, it's just not reality.
No, it isn't.
That's not what's happened
over
there.
The truth is, Saddam Hussein, as a dictator, was forcing the Shiites and the Sunnis and the Kurds to all get along.
Right.
Otherwise, I'll kill you.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not a pleasant way to live, but that's why dictatorships actually work.
Yeah.
I'm not in favor of them, don't get me wrong, but that's why they work, because people are terrified not to toe the line.
Right.
So now that he's been removed, they are free to move about and to hate each other and to kill each other. And,
exactly.
And, you know, going in and saying, okay, the diplomats have all gotten together and we really think you should make nice with each other. That's not going to do it.
It's not going to do it. And one side note, which doesn't really get any play at all, is that if at least under Saddam, if you were Christian, you were free to worship in peace, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Now, forget it. The Christian population inside Iraq is basically left the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, last one out is going to have to turn off the church lights because they cannot worship in secret anymore. We've talked about this before, about how they have to run secret buses on different routes on Sundays to get people to church mm-hmm. safely. It's just, you know, and that's, again, something that you're not going to hear on Fox News or CNN. But the fact is that what we've done in Iraq effectively is create an anarchist state that can't hold itself together. We're probably going to wind up with a state that's broken into three parts,
mm-hmm.
which former CIA Director Woolsey speculated was the best, you know, proposed actually before we invaded. Because if we leave things the way they are with the Shiite majority in Iraq, all we've done is create a new best friend for Iran.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we're fools if we think that the reality there is anything different. And what is really, you know, with each passing day, gets a little harder to take is hearing from the administration and from pundits in the mainstream media that support the administration that saying that the emperor has no clothes is being un-American.
He has no hair gel.
Well, at least he's got
hair
gel.
Actually, he can probably take hair gel on Air Force One.
They probably screen it. They've got somebody who works it into his hair first just to make sure it doesn't explode, you know, like a food taster.
Oh, yeah. So, Kim Jong-il has someone like that?
Now, we don't for a minute think that there aren't groups of people out there in the world who want to harm us American citizens and other Westerners. We know that there are radical Islamic groups that think violence is a means to an end. In fact, just reading and keeping up to date with the research that Doug Hagman has been doing and his staff at Northeast Intelligence Network, Laura Mansfield at her website, lauramansfield.com, has done some excellent analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Her article this past week, which Sharon cited in Watcher magazine, about Raykan Ben Williams, adds a very troubling aspect to the war on terror.
In fact, she was on CNN International, which we don't get here.
Right.
I hope some of you were able to see that.
Yeah, she was a guest on Sunday afternoon on that program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have her on my program here in Columbia, Missouri again tomorrow. That'll be the third time in 3 weeks. But she's got really good information.
I think she should be a weekly feature. I really do. She's got so much to say.
She really does. And I'm going to talk to her about that tomorrow. So there are people out there who want to hurt us. But the fact is, and this is what we hope to communicate, is not that we just oppose this government and everything it stands for. That's not it. We just oppose the government using this mm-hmm. conflict as a justification to gut the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, this past week, a federal judge in Detroit declared the NSA's warrantless wiretap program unconstitutional. When you read the Fourth Amendment, it's pretty clear, because the government is supposed to, before they spy on you or come into your home and search through your stuff, convince a judge that they have probable cause to suspect you of something, and they have to describe what they're looking for specifically. Not this NSA wireless wiretap where it's just, well, he's making a phone call offshore someplace, so therefore we need to listen to it. And from what's been divulged, we see that the NSA is listening in on domestic phone calls within the country. That's unconstitutional. The FISA court was established to give the administration and the Justice Department the tools to track potential terrorists. And the government, this administration, has said, no, we don't even need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what bothers me is because they do not have to show any probable cause. It is awfully close to presumed guilty.
Exactly. That is exactly the point. Talked about this, you know, we've talked about this before, and, mm-hmm. and very often the reaction that we'll get from people who support it is support the wiretap program is, well, look, if it makes us safer, then I'm all for it. And besides, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to hide.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right. It turns the presumption of innocence on its head. Mm-hmm. You're presumed guilty until proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
We have ancestors who established this country who fought the war,
mm-hmm.
the Revolutionary War, because they insisted...
Yep.
That they have privacy and
yep.
Writ of habeas corpus.
Yeah, the Fourth Amendment is pretty clear. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, in today's electronic world, you've got to broaden the definition of a search somewhat, but the point remains the same. You have the reasonable expectation of privacy inside your home or mm-hmm. in your phone conversations or in your email, unless the administration, unless the Justice Department can show a judge that they have probable cause to believe you're doing something illegal.
Well, let's turn on the Wayback Machine for a minute and go back in time a few years back to, 1997, something like
Somewhere
that.
Somewhere there, 6, 7, yeah.
Yeah, there was a certain Washington intern
mm-hmm.
who was on the phone with another certain female Washington employee.
Government employee.
Exactly. A government employee who decided to tape the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And within a very short period of time, that whole conversation was heard over and over again and referred to over and over again all across the world. And soon a president was impeached.
Mm-hmm.
This was a conversation that was private.
Yep.
Now, I know. I'm glad that all of that went public. But the question at the time for Linda Tripp was, did you have the right to tape that?
To tape the calls, yeah.
Well, the very fact that that was questioned at the time, I applaud. Again, I think the whole content of the conversation is something that eventually people should have learned about.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it took place during a private conversation, and you and I would like to know that the conversations we have with our family mm-hmm. and our friends, maybe PID listeners, are private.
Right. And it's not that we have anything to hide. It's just that the government has no business sticking its nose.
My conversations are pretty boring, honestly.
Yeah. Government has no business listening in without probable cause. Because you know, human nature being what it is, living in a fallen world with fallen people around us, that that information can very well mm-hmm. be used against you at some point. And the history of the world should guide us to show that once government gets its hands on a power, it rarely gives it back without a fight.
Oh, no. It's just once you lose a right,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's going on.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah. The Fourth Amendment is very close. And I applaud the judge. Now, I've heard some legal scholars comment that the judge in the case did not issue a very well-written decision. But I think that her decision is the correct one. I do think that this warrantless wiretap program is clearly unconstitutional. And I know it's already been appealed. It's probably going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, where, sadly, because of the recent appointments by the president, I don't think her decision is going to stand. But I think the Fourth Amendment is clearly in jeopardy.
All we have to do is have martial law declared, and it's all out the window anyway.
Right. what is really galling about this power that the administration claims it needs to fight the war on terror is that there are so many other things that would make more sense that are being ignored, that it puts the lie to the argument that this power is really needed. Let's look at the southern border.
I'm glad you're bringing that up.
Another story that Sharon spotted and posted to Watcher magazine this past week. National Guard troops on the southern border are deployed, and the Border Patrol agents, whom they are supposed to relieve and supplement, are subsequently ordered to serve as bodyguards for the National Guard troops.
This is so funny. Okay, the National Guard was sent to rescue the day. They're supposed to be the cavalry riding in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, driving in. And yet, the National Guard isn't armed.
Does this make any sense to you? What is the purpose? National Guard troops, and this is according now to an expose published by the Washington Times this past week. The Border Patrol agents have been ordered to stay within 5 minutes of the National Guard units that have been sent to help them guard the border, which means essentially they're serving nanny duty, which is what they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Guard troops, according to the Border Patrol agents interviewed, are not allowed to carry loaded weapons, despite what they say, a significant increase in border violence directed at Border Patrol agents over the last year. This is stupid.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And what surprises me, frankly, is that the Washington Times picked up the story. The Washington Times is very much in the pocket, or I should say perhaps certain politicians are in the pockets, mm-hmm. of the person who owns the Washington Times.
Sun Myung-moon.
Exactly.
Yeah. According to the National Border Patrol Council president, T.J. Bonner, other agents, Border Patrol agents, are being assigned to supervise the National Guard troops who are performing different administrative tasks. Overtime was authorized for these duties, but was not authorized for patrolling the border prior to the arrival of the National Guard. In other words, this is all just a political show. The Guard has been sent down there.
No.
They're not given authority to carry weapons, which means they can't defend themselves against these, I don't know what you would call them, bandoleros or drug runners or whatever. The Border Patrol agents, a couple of days before the Guard arrived, were ordered to go up into the hills and chase away the lookouts for the drug running gangs so that they wouldn't shoot the National Guard troops walking around. Now, National Guard troops are soldiers. They're trained to use their firearms.
Yes.
So why aren't they being allowed to carry loaded weapons? Because, you know, all of this makes no sense whatsoever until you step back and say, well, gee, what is the actual goal here? Not the one that the politicians are telling us. What's the actual goal here? Well, the actual goal is to keep the border open. This is what Jerome Corsi has been writing about now for mm-hmm. some time. They want the border open for a free flow of workers across the border because the long-term goal is to merge the U.S., Canada, and Mexico into
exactly.
one super state. So putting the Guard down on the border but not allowing them to do anything allows the drug runners and the people to keep crossing the border without any interruption, while at the same time then the politicians can come back to us folks here in red state America and see we're doing our part. We put 6,000 troops down there on the border. Gosh, we don't know why 1 million people still came across the border in the last few months. Mr. Bonner said that the truth of the matter is that this was really interesting, that the administration's claimed that there was a 45% decrease in the number of illegal aliens apprehended since the National Guard arrived on the scene.
Notice that it doesn't say decrease in the number crossing over, just
right.
a decrease in the number apprehended.
That's right. But what Bonner, who's the president of the union overseeing the Border Patrol guards, said that it's misleading. What they did was they compared May, June, July, that quarter, with the previous quarter, which is March through May.
Mm-hmm.
It gets really, really hot in May, June, and July down in the Texas, New Mexico, Arizona border.
Sure.
And so you always have fewer people. When you compare to the same time period the previous year, the apprehensions are down 3%, which is statistically insignificant. He said, normally there's a 30% drop in the people trying to cross the border in May, June, July, because it's really, really hot. So, and this year with the record heat that they've had down there in June and July, it's insignificant. So putting the Border Patrol, supplementing the Border Patrol with the National Guard has made no difference whatsoever. And he said, oh, by the way, he doubted there's a legitimate need for 6,000 administrative personnel to oversee a workforce of fewer than 12,000 agents.
6,000?
Yeah, 6,000 administrative personnel for 12,000 agents.
But that's typical bureaucracy.
Typical bureaucracy.
That's pretty lean for a bureaucratic environment. You know, one bureaucrat for every two workers.
Field agents, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually pretty lean. I think it's normally a one-to-one ratio.
So what we've got is a government that's making noise about trying to keep us safe in the war on terror. We've got millions of people crossing our border from Mexico on an annual basis. The government is doing nothing serious, is taking no serious steps to stop it. And yet they claim that they need the right to enter your home without a warrant and without notifying you, to listen in our phone calls without notifying us or requiring a warrant, in order to keep us safe. But let's let all of these guys from south of the border cross over without stopping them.
And it is perfectly all right. In fact, it's encouraged to have the entrepreneurial spirit that says that you take your $25,000 in cash, young student from Texas, you get in the car with your friends, you drive to Michigan, you buy $25,000 worth of cell phones from Walmart in different visits, and you go back to Texas and sell them and make $5,000 profit. Now that's
entrepreneurial.
The American way.
Yeah, that's a story that Doug Hagel...
And throw away the cell phone chargers.
Chargers, right. Yeah, we're going to throw away...
Which means you're not selling the phones.
Right. Yeah, we're going to throw away the charger, which makes the phone, you know, useful for a few days at most, and we're going to charge more than we paid for the phone at Walmart. That sounds, you know... Okay, I've got a degree in economics, so... And even though it was a long time ago and I've never used it since then, I'm pretty sure that that's a bad business model.
You can still add one and one.
Yeah. Doug Hagman of Northeast Intelligence Network, when I talked to him last week, said that this case, the three in Michigan with the 1,000 cell phones in their car, the fact...
And pictures of the Mackinac Bridge.
Yeah, and pictures of the Mackinac Bridge, which is a five-mile bridge connecting Michigan to the Upper Peninsula there. In the van, the fact that they weren't charged with some sort of terrorist activity just, you know, made the veins in his head explode. That's the way he put it. Mm-hmm. He just can't believe it. And Sharon's absolutely right. When you figure that these track phones at Walmart retail for $19.98 each, and you add tax in there, by the time you're done, those 1,000 cell phones are worth over $20,000. That's probably more than the van that these three guys were driving was worth.
Mm-hmm.
$20,000 were the cell phones. And yet the government says, no terrorism here. No potential malfeasance here. They're just trying to raise money for college. That's unbelievable.
Yes.
And what it says is that the goal of keeping us safe from terror isn't really true.
Exactly.
It can't be.
But these guys down in Florida... who had dreams of taking down...
Yes. Dreams of taking out the Holland Tunnel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who didn't even have, enough money
to... They couldn't buy shoes.
Yeah.
They were asking people to help them buy uniforms. They couldn't afford anything. It was all in their heads.
Yeah. If we sound like we're agog, it's because we are. Not Gog from Magog. Don't confuse us with
that. No, we're not
that.
But we are aghast. We are agog. We're aghast.
It's... And the only way these separated incidents make any sense at all is if you say, gee, maybe what we're being told isn't really true. Maybe something else is going on here. And this is where you start, you know, thinking along lines that get you branded a conspiracy theorist.
Left-wing moon bat, right-wing conspiracy.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. And, it's really interesting hearing callers on talk shows like Hannity or Bortz or Savage, whoever, O'Reilly, they call in and they start talking about things like this. So why did the government, this doesn't make any sense. And you know what? I'm beginning to think that maybe there's something to this whole thing. Hey, you're obviously a lunatic. You're out of here. Goodbye.
Exactly. they get dumped.
Here's something to consider, though. When you start thinking about conspiracy theorists and tinfoil hat wearing people, we're approaching the fifth anniversary of 9/11. A recent survey revealed that 30% of Americans don't know what year 9/11 took place. 30% of American adults.
You think they know what day it took place on?
Don't know about that. Probably. Actually, I saw a study that said only 90% were able to actually name the month and date. I'm not sure what the other 10% were thinking. Anyway, when you take out that 30%, okay, you're left with 70%. Another recent survey showed that about 34% of adult Americans now believe the government knew, collaborated in, or allowed 9/11 to happen, which means that you got a roughly 50% split of the people who actually remember 9/11,
mm-hmm.
who believe the government story and don't believe the government story. And I think that's why the last couple of weeks, you've probably noticed more and more stories coming out about people who question the official 9/11 theory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very interesting because this is happening a lot faster, it seems. Now, of course, I wasn't really at an age to pay attention to this back then, but it seems to me that this is happening a lot faster than the slow growth of the conspiracy theory movement around the JFK assassination.
Well, no, actually, that grew up really fast.
Did it?
In fact, within weeks, people were saying he wasn't even dead.
Yeah.
What I think we have to remember is this is only 2 years away from a presidential election. It's also, we're only a few months away from a congressional election.
Yeah.
I think the fact that these stories are coming out is indicative of the fact that many Americans are starting to question the official story. But also, I think being allowed to happen so long as the mud gets thrown to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Democrats, and even the moderates, they don't want to be associated with any of that. Let's say, okay, that Bush administration, that Bush cabal, they're the ones responsible. But what we want you to remember is that as far as Derek and I are concerned, what we believe is that it's not just the right. It's not just the left.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of politicians for the last century who have been in on various stages of a long-term plan. And if that sounds like a really big conspiracy, way too much for you to swallow, remember that this isn't just a human plan.
Mm-hmm.
This is a millennial-old plan, thousands of years, that the supernatural battle has been planning, the supernatural movers and shakers on the other side of mm-hmm. the veil, so to speak. They're the ones. And that's why when it really comes down to it, everything is about religion.
Yes, exactly.
Don't let anybody tell you you can't talk religion and politics because, A, they're the same thing.
Yeah.
No matter what a government will tell you, oh, no, no, separation of church and state, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact is, it's all religion because it's either you're for God or you're against God.
Right.
Period. That is what the whole world is about.
Yeah. And what you believe determines what you do.
Mm-hmm.
How can you say that you totally separate religion from your politics?
You can't. But even at the, you know, it may not, at a personal level.
On a personal level.
Some people may really think that they're doing that.
Yeah. They're fooling themselves.
But the fact is, you and I know that every nation, at least as far as the old national boundaries
mm-hmm.
that God set up, is ruled by a supernatural hierarchy.
Right.
There are powers and princes and eons and archons mm-hmm. and all these different classifications of supernatural being. And I say that simply because we can't see them.
Right.
But they are just as real as you and I.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of eye-opening when you begin to look at the history of the world with those eyes. It was for me. And then as we've begun our own researches over the last gosh, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, however long. And we've come into contact with scholars such as Mike Heiser, who have shown from the ancient texts, the cuneiform, you know, the Sumerian and Akkadian and the ancient Syrian and Egyptian hieroglyphics that there are parallels between the cosmologies of these different cultures, that when you overlap them and then look at it from the scriptural perspective, come into focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason that the ancient Canaanites and the ancient Egyptians believed that there was a Supreme Council of 70 or 72 fits with the Old Testament. And it's because they're just different versions of the same story.
Mm-hmm.
And it really brings the Old Testament into much sharper focus. It helps to understand why some of the things that happened, which to our modern politically correct eyes were really harsh, took place. You know, it was a story of the nations under the control of the rebellious fallen angels against God and his chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
And God trying to make it clear to his chosen people that's what was going on.
Mm-hmm. But there are times when God intervenes and he raises up a country,
mm-hmm,
for his purposes. And he will bless that country and use that country to help to purify his people,
mm-hmm,
his people, the Hebrew people,
right,
his people, the church.
Yep. It's, you know, and we only see the glimpses of it in the shadows, even as we look to God and to the Holy Spirit for wisdom and discernment. Even as the Apostle Paul said, we see as through a glass darkly. And if Paul, arguably the greatest of the apostles, wasn't gifted with more clear insight than that, I don't think we can expect to see things and understand things any better.
Oh, no, not at all. But we can understand one thing. We need God.
Yeah.
Period. And God loves us. He loves you. He loves Derek. He loves me. He loves you. He sent his only begotten son to die on Calvary for all of our sins.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes right down to it, at the end of the day, that's the biggest choice you have to make in your entire life. What are you going to do with Jesus?
That's right. Yep. That's a one question entrance examination.
Mm-hmm. Pass, fail.
Pass, fail.
That is right. So as we come up on a day or a couple of days that may well change the world,
mm-hmm,
we want to remind you, what are you going to do with Jesus? We pray that if you haven't already accepted him as your Lord and Savior, that you will start to think about that. And if you want to write to us, we would love to talk to you about it. You can always email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com, or you can send us individual emails. If you'd want to send, you know, if you want to talk to Derek about it and you really, you know, would rather have that personal chat, just send it to Derek@peeringintodarkness.com. Or if for some reason you think I'm going to be easier to talk to, send it to Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com. Or if you just want to know, what on earth was I thinking when I shaved my head? Well, you can ask me that too. But you know what? My husband loves me anyway, because that's the kind of guy he is.
I do. He's the most amazing person I know.
You're the most amazing one I know, so how about that? And we want to thank everybody who's been praying for us and sent us notes telling us that you missed us. We really, really appreciate that.
We miss doing this, too. That's why we can't stay away.
No, we can't. We're crazy that way.
That's right. Hey, make sure you're paying attention to the Little League World Series. Our hometown team from Columbia, Missouri,
woo-hoo,
is in the
woo-hoo,
Little League World Series. Only the second team from Missouri to make the Little League World Series in the last 60 years.
They were looking great today.
They did. 14-5 victory over, mm-hmm, the team from New Hampshire. It had to feel sorry for that little shortstop out there for New Hampshire, though. He lost that ball in the sun and dropped it. Oh,
I know.
Wow.
Oh, that was a big one.
That was tough. But they play tomorrow, Monday night, and mm-hmm, then based on what happens tomorrow night, if they win, they probably will go on to the semifinals. And so, pretty exciting time. And the people here in Columbia, Missouri are awfully, awfully excited and proud of those little guys.
That's right. Well, I think we've coming up on the end of another hour here. If there's anything, as we say, you want to say to us, send us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. We do have a forum. We want to warn you, if you're coming onto the forum just to spam us, you're not going to get to do it for very long.
No, that's right. We're pretty diligent about taking care of those spam. I mean, you know, look, one note about, well, no, I won't go there. Just, yeah.
Listen. We don't like that spam.
That's right. Like, you haven't spam. Got something intelligent to say. Spam itself is a
spam
delicious
itself,
product.
I actually kind of like, but no, not that kind.
That's right.
We don't want that going on. But if you want to come there and you just want to chat to some with some people who are like-minded, it's a great place. You may find occasionally that people don't agree with everything you have to say, but you know what? Not every one of you agrees with us, and that's okay. As long as you're thinking and you're praying and you're really trying to come up with the right answers, that's all we ask.
And don't forget to check the show notes at PIDradio.com. All the links will be there to the articles that we talked about tonight, so you can read those in more depth and do a little investigation and research on your own.
Well, honey, we got to go. Until next week, I'm Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Don't let the hard times.
This is PID Radio.